Hello, my loves, and welcome back once again to another episode of Straight Up, the pop culture and celeb podcast hosted by us journalists, Kathleen and Ellie. How are you doing, my love?
I'm good. I have had a very fun weekend.
Nice.
Soho House Festival.
Fun summer weekends.
Where I went with my boyfriend and made him do a photo shoot of me on various like fun disco chairs.
Have I not seen this? Have you?
I did notice you hadn't liked my post, even though Marlon had.
I haven't seen it.
But my Instagram algorithm is really fucked. I don't get.
I'll have a look.
Friends.
I will.
No, I was like, do you not think I look nice?
No, I just haven't seen these various chair shoots. And how good were the unlimited picantes and food? Would you say it's worth buying a ticket to Soho House Festival?
I would say I didn't meet anyone who had bought a ticket. It was all brands. Because I was asking people because I was genuinely intrigued as to who was in that. But I didn't meet any. They were all brands. They were like River Island.
That makes a lot more sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. And Google. Lots of Google people.
Yeah.
My poor boyfriend got a drink spilt on him and then had to wear a Soho House staff t-shirt for most of the festival. But it was fun. I also didn't have a single hangover because, not Spawn, but I have discovered Fizz tablets, which puns.
PSA, you've told me about them, but the honeys need to hear it too.
Good. Fizz tablets are expensive, but if you bulk order them on Amazon, it's much cheaper and you have one at the end of a night, not the next morning, and you wake up like a little daisy.
It's like my milk thistle, which I don't take as much anymore. I find this way with all the hangover cures. You like do it for a while and then you just fizzle out with them.
That's true. Milk thistle stopped me being sick, but this literally refreshes me. It has so many vitamins in it.
It's a rehydration thing, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, because some people have diarrhea, you know, the diarrhea thing.
I had that at Glastonbury. In fact, I double did them. I did them together. It was mad. But crazy. Yeah, crazy. I think you can tell when it's like legit because it's not like those nice effervescent tablets where it's like, oh, a nice little morning juice. It's gross.
Yeah, yeah. It tastes like really salty.
What did you do?
I went to Green Tea Peng at Somerset House on Saturday, which was so, so fun. It was actually like the best gig that I've been to probably all year. It's just such a nice setting, Somerset House, as you know. I mean, it literally rained. Like, it was pouring down at one point during the gig and everyone was just like dancing in the rain. It was fine because it was so warm. It's just like the funnest location. Like, I love the kind of gorgeous, like ornate architecture juxtaposed with the really relaxed vibe. You know how everyone sits on the floor and there's always like four, well, not obviously when Green Tea Peng was playing, but like pre. So it's like doors at 5:30 and then there's like four support acts. So everyone's just like hanging around, having some drinks, having a little dance. So it was actually amazing. She was really good. I'd never seen her play live before. Her voice was just like stunning. She's got great stage presence, really chill, really funny. It was fantastic. I highly, highly recommend. Kathleen. 5 stars from Kathleen.
I don't mean to offend you, but I thought you were too old for Green Tea Peng.
Well,
I thought she was a cool kid because I'd never heard of her until like 2 years ago.
Well, I'll have you know that one of the four people I went with is in fact one of our friends' mums. So there's no such thing as too old for Green Tea Peng.
That's true, actually.
Yeah, there was people of all ages there. There were people that were like, you know, kind of 18-year-olds. And then there were also the middle-aged crew. We love to see it.
One of my best friend's mothers is Jay Huss's biggest fan. She's like 60, middle class, lives in Putney.
Also, again, hats off to her. Jay Huss is fucking amazing. So I hear you, honey.
His album's coming soon.
I know, I'm excited. Although, maybe a controversial opinion, don't love the Drake collab.
Me neither.
It's all right.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's okay. Like, it's not, you know, a terrible song. I don't want to run it up, you know. Nothing's ever going to beat Did You See, basically. That's going to forever be his banger, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and also Friendly.
And Samantha. He's on Samantha, isn't he? As a featuring artist.
Dave, yeah.
Boof Daddy, another classic. Oh. Spirit. Love that. That whole album. Anyway.
We love Jay Huss. We interviewed him, haven't we? I took him for hot chocolate once.
I've done like red carpet style interviews with him, but I've never done a sit down.
He was so cute. Like, sorry to ruin his like bad man
his road man vibe.
Like, he was like incredibly cute and shy and smiley and just, yeah, adorbs.
Right. On to the news. We absolutely have to discuss Jonah Hill and his boundary setting / emotionally coercive controlling behavior.
So give everyone a rundown.
All right, honey. So if you haven't seen, basically, Jonah Hill made headlines over the weekend because his ex-girlfriend, Sarah Brady, who, if you remember, the iconic pale blue Gucci suits he wore with a partner on the red carpet of Don't Look Up. Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. So they were literally in the same suit. That's her. They split up a while ago now, I think the end of 2021 or something, or maybe last year they split up. He's now in a new relationship. He's actually just had a baby, but Sarah Brady, who at the time that they were together as well, can I just say, was 25, he was 37. She has come out on Instagram with all of these allegations that he was a narcissistic misogynist, that he was emotionally controlling, and she sends all these screen grabs of his various messages, which have divided the internet. Because some people think it's like great communication, fair boundary setting, and they're like, what's wrong with that? He's letting her know her his expectations for a romantic partner. But other people, myself included, are like, no, it's actually really insidious what he's doing there.
So let's read out some of the messages.
Yeah, we'll read out the messages, guys. So yeah, Sarah Brady went on Instagram and just like went off about their relationship, shared loads of personal messages. And she said basically it was like to protect her own mental health because keeping it to herself was doing more damage than sharing it ever could. Messages, the one in particular, basically some background as well. So she's a surfer. She always was. He'd like slid into her DMs even before they'd met, I think, like heartizing one of her surfing pics. She does obviously branded.
Is mental considering his, what I know now.
Yeah. So he obviously knew that that was her job when they got together. Okay. So he said, plain and simple, if you need surfing with men, boundaryless, inappropriate friendships with men, to model, to post pictures of yourself in a bathing suit, to post sexual pictures, friendships with women who are in unstable places and from your wild recent past beyond getting a lunch or a coffee or something respectful, I am not the right partner for you. If these things bring you to a place of happiness, I support it and there will be no hard feelings. These are my boundaries for a romantic relationship. My boundaries with you based on the ways these actions have hurt our trust. And so she's being like, see the misuse of the term boundaries, and everyone's being like, you're conflating setting boundaries with like coercive control. Like, it's not for you to tell.
There is so much wrong with
this. There's so much to unpack okay, there,
firstly,
isn't there?
Firstly, the most minor point. I've seen that message. Who sends a text message with bullet points to their ex-partner? Like, you're not doing a presentation to your colleagues. Like, what the hell?
You can sense the kind of his like righteousness. Like, yeah. He thinks he's superior to her, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And also, secondly, why are you even having that conversation via text?
Yeah, and she has to be like, look, I've deleted these ones now. And then he's like, nope, that one's not okay. Your ass is hanging out in a thong. Like, it's a surfing video of her, like, in a swimsuit that, like, has, like, a cheeky cut.
Also,
and she's like, not a thong, but okay. And she has to, like, oh, and then she's like, I didn't delete that one because it's my best surfing video. And he's like, well, you need to change the thumbnail. Like, it's just...
There's a classic thing of man gets distracted by women's body and therefore makes it her fault when she's like,
yes,
in a professional environment.
Totally, it's
like,
that.
If you're getting aroused by a woman's ass cheek when she's doing a professional video in the sea, then that is...
So it's more about you than her. But he's obviously hyper insecure. I mean, what I found really interesting about it, and I wanted to talk to you about, because we've talked about this on the podcast before, is like when people weaponize like therapy speak. Because I actually... Like we said, I like Jonah Hill. I talked again in a different podcast episode all about his documentary, Schultz, I think it's the pronunciation, which is all about his therapist that was on Netflix earlier this year, maybe late last year. I think it must have been earlier this year. And I really, really loved that. It detailed his whole journey with therapy, obviously his insecurities. But then you see this and you're like, mate, you clearly haven't learned anything at all. Like, you are a massive narcissist and you're using what you've learned in therapy to essentially like... get your own way and gaslight people.
I think there can be such a victim narrative in therapy.
Yeah.
I have genuinely got anecdotal experience of this myself, of therapists telling me that everyone else is to blame and I am the victim of every person's actions and I'm not responsible for anything myself. That cannot be good for self-development. Obviously, sometimes it's true. Sometimes, obviously, we're dealing with stuff where you really are the victim. You've got
to acknowledge that.
And sometimes you haven't acknowledged that, and that's why it's so important. But there's like a fine line, isn't there?
Yeah, there really is. Sydney Lima actually did a really good piece at the end of 2021 in The Times, which I liked, which was like, why are all millennials using therapy speak? And it was that same principle, is that they're by setting boundaries, by like removing toxic people from your life. Like, I'm not literally inherently criticizing those things. I think, of course, those are super necessary and therapy is such a great tool for you to like help to realize how you can make those changes. But they also just can, give you like a massive like get out of jail free card to treat other people around you really quite badly because you're just prioritizing and centering your own like happiness so much. And I think therapy, I love therapy, again, huge advocate of it, have learned so much from it. But for some people, I think there's a, if you lean towards being narcissistic anyway, I feel like therapy basically legitimizes a lot of your views and it helps you, and it bolsters not only a victim mentality, but also this idea that you're always right and that everyone else around you is like awful and that you are like the star of your own movie, which of course we all are. Everyone is the star of their own show. But we also need to understand that so is everyone else in their lives. Like, other people are not supporting roles in your Hollywood movie. Like, they have their own interior life as well.
Which is this whole, I know it's obviously just a joke, but the whole like main character energy. It's like, I know it's a joke, but also I do see people genuinely
believing that,
acting as if they are a main character. And I mean, you know, we've just been reading Caroline Calloway's book, where she talks about, she writes about herself deciding what to do with her life based on how she would like a book with a Caroline Calloway character in it.
Yeah, and it's quite funny when you read her book and then compare it to the viral 2019 The Cut article by her ghostwriter. Because again, like, you, that's literally a real time, just beautiful little example, like a microcosm of how much people are in their own heads. Because they both truly believe that, like, they are the victim of the situation. Yeah. And when you read both, they're both pretty compelling accounts. Like,
yeah. It's difficult though, because I do think with therapy, the whole, you're meant to be trying to build a stronger self, whatever strength might mean, but you are built, a victim mentality is a very fragile state of mind, and you're actually just weakening your own ability, your own resilience.
Yeah, you are. And actually, like, people don't like to hear that they're responsible for their own lives. Like, Stephen Bartlett's talked about this before in Diary of CEO. When you mention the words like personal responsibility or accountability, there's literally a noticeable like drop off in listenership, because people don't like the idea that they have to take responsibility for their own lives. People actually like to be victims of circumstance, and they like to kind of wear that as a badge and be like, well, I didn't achieve X, Y, and Z because of X, Y, and Z. Again, I'm absolutely like at pains to express or to emphasize that I do not think that everyone has the same opportunities in life, and that, you know, you can just like go and do whatever you like regardless of circumstance. Of course, circumstance, socioeconomic factors, trauma, whatever else play like a massive, massive part. But I mean, I do think that people don't like to hear that they have the power in their own lives. And ultimately, that is the lesson of therapy. It's that you are powerful. You have autonomy. Like, you can be the architect of your own life, kind of thing. And, but not to the detriment of other people.
Yeah, exactly. So let's focus in on some of these claims from Jonah Hill.
His boundaries.
His boundaries. I think it's absolutely despicable that he should jump into her DMs with a heart emoji on a surfing picture. I assume she's not in a wetsuit. She's probably in a bikini though.
Yeah, that's the cheek of it. So what I found so mad, like we say, is the how divided the internet was. Like, when I first saw the post, I saw it in the Shade Room, like, and the comments were so divided. Like, some people are like, I literally don't see the problem here. He's clearly and effectively communicating. He said that he completely supports her decision to not do those things and not be in the relationship. He's just letting her know his expectations for a romantic partnership. But you can't move the goalposts when you got together under a different proviso. Yeah. You can't turn around to someone that does surfing modeling as part of their work and be like, you're not allowed to post pictures in a bikini of you surfing. And stuff. And like, surfing with dudes, whatever. Like, sorry, why can't she surf with men? Like, I just don't think that that's, I don't think that's a reasonable request. I just don't. I think, fair enough, in a way, he's not an Instagram person. He's not on social media. And there was more messages where he's like, if you need the validation of strangers on the internet, then that's fine, but that's not where I am in my life. That bit I kind of get, in the sense.
The irony as well, that he was around a man giving her validation.
Well, also like, yeah, you don't have to be, because you're already like wildly successful and you're 12 years older than her. Oh, so you don't need to be like shelling your wares on Instagram. You're like literally one of the most famous actors in the world. So, I mean, he's clearly deeply insecure. And we talk about that in the episode about Schultz, his therapist. He obviously, completely fair enough, has a lot of insecurity around his weight. That was, you know, built upon massively when he was famous, but it started like in childhood with comments from his mom and stuff like that. So maybe he's just like, his extreme insecurity, it's just, well, it's just so obvious in these messages, but it's not, that doesn't make it excusable, which actually is what she says, which is quite interesting. Her last message, I think, was like, just comes because someone acts like this doesn't mean they're a bad person. Like, they're acting from a place of their own trauma, but equally like emotionally controlling behavior is not okay. And she did do some posts as well about like, oh, I hope my ex has a daughter. As I say, he's just had a baby. And my hope for him is that he's surrounded by feminists, like, who teach him the true meaning of the word. Whereas a lot of the commenters are like, oh, she's just doing this for fame. Why is she bringing this up like a year and a half later? She just wants everyone to feel sorry for her. You know, people are really skeptical about her intentions.
Yeah, so I did see Emily Nussbaum from The New Yorker, who is a very, very good TV critic, and I'd say very nuanced in everything she ever writes, tweeting, like subtweeting, didn't name it, but it's clearly she's talking about this, like, I don't think it's appropriate for someone to just leak their ex's private messages onto Instagram.
Yeah, people think that it's like such a breach of trust and stuff like that.
So I do understand the whole, like, I don't want to keep it to myself, but are there not like loads of friends that you could share it with privately rather than like sharing it to like millions of people on the internet?
Do you know what though? It would be so frustrating watching your ex be like held up as this like bastion of feminism and like a man that's constantly supporting women and whatever else. And then you know the truth. That would be jarring. I mean, I'm not just, I don't know. I actually don't know how I feel about it one way or another.
I too, in that sense. I'm definitely not above that, but it still feels kind of vindictive.
It is quite vindictive.
I don't know.
But but what's wrong with like being vindictive if your ex literally emotionally abused you, you know?
Two wrongs don't make a right, Kathleen.
I know they don't.
The Bible will tell you.
I know. But why does he get to have like...
No, it's true.
Such a sparkling reputation, you know?
It's true. Yeah.
When she knows the truth. However, I don't know. It's all very like, he said, she said, ultimately, isn't it? In that those messages read like terribly, but they are just screen grabs. We actually don't know
also
the ins and outs.
She doesn't come across that well either. It's just one of those
things. No, she doesn't come across that well.
Just airing your dirty laundry in public. Neither of you look good. You both look petty. Like,
he's not, I bet you he'll just say nothing. He just won't comment, I reckon. Like, he's probably just quietly getting on with like new fatherhood and he'll probably hope that it will all blow over. Loads of celebrities are supporting as well. I saw even like Devin Booker, Kendall Jenner's ex,
supporting
did a
Jonah
tweet support. And a lot of people are saying, I noticed again in comments, that you know how there was this drama with Keke Palmer in the last week? So guys, if you didn't see it, Keke Palmer's baby daddy went public with criticism of an outfit she was wearing on TV, which was basically very thongy. It was like a sheer dress at the back with a thongy cut underneath. And he like, basically called her out like publicly and everyone was like, why the hell would you do that? That's so inappropriate. Just send her a message. Like, that's literally like your partner and the mother of your children. Why are you criticizing her in a public forum?
Also, who cares if she's wearing a thongy dress?
He was like, you're the mother of my children. I don't want you wearing that. Obviously, that's
toxic.
Yeah. But it's annoying because when you look in the comments, you see that people kind of agree with his culture. So I think that's what I was saying earlier, in that people, there's a kind of puritanicalism coming up that's like a response to the ridiculousness of social media and women being in their underwear constantly and knowing that bikini pics sell and whatever else. And I do get that it's like reactionary. Do you know what I mean? I get that people are like, not going to lie, if I was on dating apps and I was looking for someone, I mean, maybe I wouldn't put this in the comments because you just look, well, the description, because you just sound like a fucking bitch. But like, also, you know, I might not even have the opportunity to date someone like this, but would you necessarily want to date a man who makes his living being an underwear model on Instagram? Because I wouldn't.
No.
But you set that boundary pre-getting together. That's a personal boundary. And that's what a lot of like really interesting critics of Jonah Hill have said, is that he's confusing boundaries, in that boundaries are something you set for yourself. You don't get to put boundaries on someone else. That's not how boundaries work.
That is a very good point.
Yeah, they're personal. So a boundary would be, I don't date women who do social media influencing in bikinis. And like, if they're not aligned with his values, well, he should have known that, shouldn't he, when they got together?
Yeah, that's so true. But also to your point, actually, I think my like kind of cookie cutter response immediately was, I know women should wear what they like. And I do believe that. But it's true that sometimes I do look at social media, and even as pressure as a woman, I'm like, oh, do I need to always like be wearing semi-sheer mesh dresses with my thong out and boobs out?
And I can see if you have that separation between sexualized Instagram culture and also women being able to wear what they want. I can see why one might have more of an issue with the former. Have I got that the right way around? Former and the latter, you know, I always get those wrong.
It is, it sometimes, and maybe this is problematic, but sometimes you do think you're doing too much, you're too naked.
Yeah. And also it's just like the way that everyone has to feed into the algorithm. I think that's what's quite like sad about the platform. And if you work in that world and stuff, like, I'm sure loads of well-known women would probably prefer not to post images like in a bikini top, but they do because that's good for the algorithm. More people like it, more people see it. I mean, I noticed that with some like influencers that I like fitness influencers will choose the picture, like Megan Grubb, always when she does her a gallery on Instagram of workouts, the front of the gallery is some kind of like body focused photograph, and then the next bits in the slide are the workout. And obviously the purpose of the slide is a workout. But to actually get anyone to even look at it, you've got to run with like a sexy pic where your bum looks great, or you're wearing a tiny top.
I've seen Jamila Jamil use that really well. She'll like post a picture of her boobs and be like, right, now I've got you. Like, this is what I need you to know about like a Ozempic.
And I think a lot of people do that, like that Chaka Bars. Like he'll be like, he'll post something really basic about like sex or like nudity. And then he'll be like, now I have your attention. Can I direct you to my charity work in the Congo?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's no secret, we've been living with these platforms now for like more than a decade. Like, we know that they lean into like the very worst aspects of humanity. And I could see why, as a personal boundary, you might not want to go into a romantic partnership with someone whose entire career and like persona is tied up with this like digital footprint as well. But I'm not saying that that validates his statements in any way. Yeah. I think he's completely out of order. But I can see why you might want to set that as a personal boundary for yourself pre to meeting someone.
But also, if she is a surfer, even if we didn't have social media, she's still going to be naked.
Yeah, and she's saying now it's taken her like a year to like heal and like be able to like actually go out surfing in a bikini rather than some kind of like conservative full wetsuit.
Oh my God.
Which is just absolutely bonkers.
I also noticed that Jonah Hill's new partner is...
Olivia Miller?
Yeah, is her whole family are like a family of models.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. He is such a little hypocrite.
She's not a model. She's also, like behind the camera.
Also, remember with all the surfing stuff, maybe it was when he was with Sarah Brady, in fact, maybe that's where the pictures came. But when he was like body shamed by the media, when he was out surfing and everyone was commenting on his weight and he like made a public comment and I really respected it. It was really good.
So
and
he surfs as well.
Yes. And like there's been pictures. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like,
oh my God.
The absolute audacity. You can't tell someone they're not allowed to do their hobby that they've done since they were 3 years old. I just don't think that's appropriate.
And what's so awful about coercive control, and I actually say this from not having experienced it, but is that it's so gradual. Like he'll just cut
yeah, little, it's insidious.
After a little liberty yeah. and you kind of don't, and then suddenly it's 3 years later and you realize you're not doing anything you love anymore, and you're not seeing anyone you love anymore.
Yeah.
And that thing where he said, you're not allowed to reconnect with girlfriends from your world past unless it's for a respectable coffee. There is so much, the yeah, you're not allowed shame.
Yeah, he was like, you can't meet up with unstable girlfriends. Girlfriends who are in an unstable place. How literally dare you? And you're meant to be this advocate for better mental health, having done an entire documentary about therapy. And then you go on to say that she's not allowed to see friends who are unstable.
What, so like I was just meant to like, for instance, not see my friend who was sectioned during lockdown?
Like that's, can't do that. Like,
yeah.
How dare he say that? Like, that is so unbelievably problematic.
And I think also, like, yes, some people might say that he's just clearly defining his boundaries. God, I hate that we're even using this word so much. But
yeah.
The whole thing so to me reeked of shame. Like, it
yes,
was language.
Yes.
Even using the word respectable there.
Like, it's as if, like, she's this, like, crazy, wild slut that's like, when he's like, you hurt our trust in the past by doing these things. And he's like, literally, she had to like, some of the screen grabs showed her like sending him images of women in tops and being like, are these sexual? So it's like a pregnant woman in a sports bra, like advertising something, someone else. And she's, you know, she obviously was kind of pushing back to an extent. But I think that that's part of the problem in a way with an age gap. Like there's nothing inherently wrong with age gaps. Again, weirdly, I think we even talked about that last week. I don't think there's anything wrong with having a big age difference in a relationship, but it does not help the power dynamic.
Okay,
like we say,
hang on. I need to unpick you there. Because, okay, how would you feel if 65-year-old and a 17-year-old, because it is over the age of consent.
Okay, no, in that sense, well, it just depends. Yeah, I think anyone that's like around the age of like 17, 18, that's always going to be questionable because they are so young. Do you know what I mean? So regardless of what the age difference is up. But again, I don't, you never know. Like, you know, I have family members who met when... Like I have an aunt and an uncle who met when she was 17 and he was 35 and they're like happily ever after, still together in their 80s. Yeah, so I think that's a really good example of one of those stories that like on paper was like super problematic. And like at the time, I know like my mum's told me like her parents, my grandparents were like absolutely furious. There was loads of drama at the time. People were like really suspect about why they were getting together. And, you know, then they went on to have two kids, loads of grandchildren, have had the happiest life together. So I think it can be... You know, it is sometimes it's just like unfortunate. You know, I don't want to be like age is nothing but a number, but sometimes people just connect. Yeah. I think that does happen. And I don't think that age should like stop people from like living their happily ever after because there's 15 years between them.
Even I've noticed that among some of my girlfriends who are now mostly 30, when some of our 30-year-old guy friends date like 24-year-olds,
they're not loving it.
So much shame, judgment.
Yeah. But that's annoying for the, that has an undertone of misogyny, doesn't it really? Because women of our age, like it's the whole thing of men constantly wanting to go out with younger women,
yes,
which is bloody annoying.
Like, you don't feel like 30 isn't even old. Why do you even need to date beneath us right now?
And now you like think I'm old.
Yeah.
It's probably, but again, those men, huge generalizing statement. Male honeys, let me know if I'm just chatting out of my arse here and I'm completely wrong. But I feel a lot of men who are 30 who are looking for a 24-year-old, it's partly because they're like not looking to settle down.
Yeah, that's true.
They're looking for like a fun, casual relationship, whereas they know a 30-year-old woman's like Samaritan babies. Again, huge generalization. Of course, they're not all like that, but you know what I mean? That's their perception.
Do you know what? Sugar Daddy reached out to me on Instagram last week.
Really? Sorry, oh my God.
My boyfriend
there. You're finding out now?
He's not attractive. I'm not interested.
What did he say?
He was like, hello.
Is he like a real one or is it like?
Yeah, he's a real one. My phone's
recording. Oh, damn.
But it wasn't very exciting. It was just like, hey, you're really beautiful. You're looking to earn some money. I'm happy to like pay like whatever you want. I know. I was like, am I tempted? No, obviously not. But like.
God. Yeah. I wondered like what goes on in that, like.
I mean.
That honestly, whole world these days.
If I became financially destitute, I am certainly not above being on OnlyFans and not doing sexual content, but like doing something that doesn't evolve.
No, absolutely not. And I think I do agree with Emily Ratajkowski on that point in that like women have to work within the capitalist patriarchal framework that we're in.
Absolutely.
So you can't say someone's anti-feminist just because they're like, fuck it, I'll get my boobs out and make some money.
Like, yeah, exactly. One of my friends was dealing with some financial issues recently and I was like, do a foot fetish thing on OnlyFans. You've got amazing feet. Like people will pay.
Do you know what though? It does depend because like one of my friends had something similar. Like it was through a friend of hers and he was like a guy in Australia that like one of them had met like once on a night out. You know what I mean? It was like that kind of thing. And he was like, if you send me a foot picture of like one of your friends or whatever, I'll give you like 100 quid. So like, all right. So they did it and got 100 quid. And then my friend said she actually felt like really like gross afterwards. Yeah. Like once it was done, she was like, oh, I feel really like seedy and horrible. And actually, I feel like I'd actually crossed my own personal boundary without even realizing it kind of thing. She was like, I wouldn't do it again.
Okay. Question. Yeah. If a man was willing to pay you £1,000 for a pair of you socks once a
month. Hell yeah, I would.
Would you post him the socks?
I would. Yes. Same. I would. Because... you know what? Why not?
So if anyone wants mine and Kathleen's socks.
Yeah. And you're willing to pay us £1,000, we'll take it. We'll definitely take it.
You can even have more than one pair.
But you know what? Maybe this is where you have to draw lines. Not sure I would do it with underwear. Do you know what I mean? Socks feels acceptable.
I think with
knickers
socks, like,
just gets to a whole new
on you. Like,
pervy.
If you think yeah. hot, that's hilarious. My knickers, however, are.
I did wonder as well, is it, what song is it? Is it, I'm thinking of one of the Dave and Central C ones. I think it must be Sprinter, where, or maybe it's Trojan Horse, where Dave says like, I can't ask her for a foot picture because she'll think I'm a weirdo. And I was like, oh, does he have a foot fetish?
Oh my God.
Or was it just a bar? Anyone who knows about Dave's feelings on feet?
That actually sounded vaguely poetic, Kathleen.
Yeah. Let us know.
Right, guys, quick break whilst we tell you about the Art Fund's amazing National Art Pass, which is a must-have for culture lovers like us who want to see brilliant exhibitions at places like the Tate and the V&A for half the price.
Yep, the Art Fund is our fabulous new sponsor, and its National Art Pass allows you to go and see paid exhibitions at major museums and art galleries at a fantastic 50% discount. Some partnered venues are even free with the pass, such as Brighton Pavilion, one of my faves, Cardiff Castle and Ham House. It is the perfect way to spend a wholesome Sunday and a very nice change from watching TV or just going to the pub.
Absolutely. I always feel so inspired creatively when I go and pop to see an exhibition over the weekend. And if you're under 30 or 30 and under, then the 12-month membership is just £33.75 in your first year if you pay via direct debit, which is an excellent value considering the cost of a major exhibition can be up to £20, and the pass gets you into it for £10.
So good.
Literally. And I cannot wait personally for us, babe, to go and see Diva at the V&A.
So excited.
A dizzying retrospective of divas throughout the ages, from Lady Gaga to Marilyn Monroe and Elton John, reclaiming the word from its negative connotations to actually celebrate the power of self-belief.
That literally has our name all over it, doesn't it?
Yes, the fashion looks divine.
I honestly can't wait. And if the fact that these exhibitions are half priced with the Art Pass wasn't enough to convince you, then darlings, warm your heart in knowing that the Art Fund is the national fundraising charity for art. And so buying an Art Pass helps Art Fund support museums, gallery and historic places across the UK.
Yes, such a good thing. Head to artfund.org/straightup to claim your discounted 30 and under membership and enjoy hands.
Okay, two final things on Jonah Hill.
Yeah.
One, we never actually talked about You People, his Netflix film. Okay, so You People was his Netflix film that came out earlier this year that was about like kind of culture clashes in relationships. So he's a Jewish American. She, Lauren London, is a Black American, and they basically have parents that, you know, kind of don't want them to be with someone outside of their own cultures. And it's all about like how they navigate that. At the end, there's a kiss. And this was mentioned in Sarah Brady's messages because she was like, well, it's fine for you to like kiss women on set and stuff like that, but it's not fine for me to like take my surfing pictures. The kiss at the end of You People was CGI. No one said why, but I assume having done some internet sleuthing, it's partly because it could have been filmed around the time of like COVID regulations and stuff, rather than him trying to be like some kind of like demure partner that doesn't kiss actresses.
I thought I read, is she not Nipsey Hussle?
Yes, like, yes.
I think it was she didn't want to.
Out of respect for Nipsey.
I think I read that.
Right, that would make a lot more sense. Oh, I mean, that was literally, I feel so, yeah, that is really cute. And like, she's just amazing. But not the greatest film, I'm sorry to say. It's all right. I mean, guys, if you haven't seen it, it's worth a fun hungover watch or something. It's quite funny.
Oh my God, that reminds me. Have you seen J-Law's new rom-com yet? Because the reviews have not been good.
Have they? Because I saw a couple of ads and I'm like, oh yeah, it's finally here. And it was the one you talked about where she's basically the like escort for a young man.
Yeah.
I'm really sad that they've been abysmal. Well, I'm not going to trust them. I'm going to watch it anyway.
It's that classic thing of all the jokes in the trailer. And then...
Oh, really?
Else.
Oh, that is a bit of a bummer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shame, because she is looking stunning at the moment.
She really is looking fabulous. I mean, not that she ever wasn't. You know, I definitely think she's one of the most beautiful actresses out there.
But did you see those shots of her with her amazing trench coat and her three dogs?
No. But that sounds literally my exact kind of street style content.
She's got three dogs. Different dogs. Had them perfectly aligned on it.
Oh my God.
And her hair's like flicked back, her hair, so it makes me want to have long hair.
Oh, don't say that, because you know I've just cut mine short.
Yeah, but it's already long.
Do you think? I think it's short.
No, it's long.
Thank you.
Apparently rosemary oil helps your hair grow.
I've heard that. It's a big TikTok thing. But then I'm like, is it just one of those other TikTok things? Because rosemary is generally meant to be really good for you. Like, do you remember when there was rosemary water? Like when we were at GQ, we like constantly would get rosemary water sent in at the desks. Maybe it was after you'd left. Maybe. But yeah, rosemary has like all these health properties.
Well, I always put some in my gin and tonic, so.
Do you? Interesting. See, I more prefer it as a savoury garnish.
Talking of gin and tonics, guys, before we move into our next culture talking point, which is Court.
You know, Courtney. Kim and Courtney's beef. No, before we even do that, I want to tell you about this last line that she says that's quite straight up adjacent.
Hey, we're now ruining my little gin and tonic segue there, but that's fine.
Sorry. She basically said, I think fame can put people in an echo chamber of viewpoints, which can enable emotionally abusive behavior. Someone being emotionally abusive partner doesn't mean that they're a terrible person. Often it stems from their own trauma. At the same time, it doesn't mean that that's okay. I think that's a good place to leave Jonah Hill.
That is a very good place to leave him.
Back
writhing
to your
in his own shame.
Yeah, back to your rosemary segue.
Back to my rosemary segue. I would like us to recommend a very good restaurant that I took you to. Well, I took you to, but also didn't pay for it for your birthday. So Norma is this stunning restaurant. It's Sicilian inspired.
Sicilian Moorish.
Sicilian Moorish. And Moorish, yeah. We mean
M-O-O-R-I-S-H.
So like North African.
Yeah, because Sicily obviously had like lots of Moorish influence. So the food is primarily Sicilian. It's all like typical Italian fare, but with that kind of extra exciting twist.
And the aesthetic very much fused.
The aesthetic was really Moorish, wasn't it? It was giving me like all the Alhambra vibes.
Oh, it was
stunning. Beautiful. Lots of beautiful like mosaic, just gorgeous little cubby hidey holes. It was very like a little jewellery box, wasn't it?
It was.
Very chic.
And I hate to recommend
great lighting
just because they look good on Instagram, but my God, it looked good on Instagram.
It did look good on Instagram. However, what I would say most importantly was that actually the food stood up to the actual ambience and location, which, sorry to say, I don't feel like happens all that often after the pandemic. And anyone working in hospitality, I'm not being a horrible critic. I know all the reasons why, Brexit, staff, everything else, very difficult industry to work in. But I must say it's probably the best meal I've had this year.
It was so good.
I'm usually disappointed when I eat in restaurants these days, and I was actually blown away by it.
We had the most amazing, like, crispy chickpea croquette.
Oh, yeah, the fried chickpea bread things. They were called something else. I think they're called, like, panellas or something. Yeah, chickpea panellas. We then did have an arancini, which was, like, the alla norma, arancini alla norma. Obviously, for you guys that love your Italian, know that it's that aubergine pasta. There's, like, an alla norma arancini. There's an alla norma pasta. There's the alla norma main, which we got, so like an aubergine parmigiana, which, oh my God, we barely ate any in the restaurant because we were so full. More on that in a moment. But I had it the next day. So banging.
My dish was the rabbit ragu pasta.
Me too. And it's like not something that I would necessarily jump to order, rabbit, but a ragu is always my vibe. Basically, we had pastas in between starters and mains, as you always should at Italian. And it was just... What was the shape again? It was strozzopetti, wasn't it? Which is one that's based on the translation is strangled priest because of the shape of it. Remember the waiter was telling us.
Very delicate flavours. That was amazing. And also standout dish, the
the pistachio tiramisu.
Because Ellie is the cutest little pal in the whole world. And it was my birthday the week before. Ellie very kindly organised a cute little candle happy birthday surprise. It was perhaps the meekest happy birthday rendition.
I did try to sing it with the waiter. We were both
the two of you. It was actually hilarious.
He started singing it and I was like, oh God, this is just too trad. So I'll have to join.
You're going to have to join, because it was like a really warbly quiet sort of, and he didn't know my name. Yeah. So it was like having to leave a blank for you to fill in. But it was so, so cute.
Have you used your Charlotte Tilbury palette yet?
I have.
Is it nice?
It was so nice. I used it when I went to Green Tea Peng.
Oh,
it was great. So yeah, guys, Ellie got me some birthday makeup. So cute. Love it. Fun fact, I'm actually enjoying my birthday present from you last year, this Friday coming up.
Oh, yes.
My grateful cooking course. So I'll report back on that. It's such a me.
Procrastinated so much that a present I got you 365 days ago
is now in use. Such a me. But I'm so glad. I'm literally really looking forward to it. So it's worked out fantastically.
And Jamaican cuisine. So what is it?
Yes.
So it's a My Grateful Chef voucher and you can choose a cuisine.
Yep. So My Grateful basically is a cooking class led by amazing immigrants from all over the world who bring their culture and cuisine to the class. So there's really cool ones, like there's Palestinian cuisine, Syrian cuisine, Sri Lankan cuisine. Unfortunately, not that I don't love Jamaican food, I do. However, I have previously dabbled with jerk chicken. So I would have gone for a more like unusual cuisine that maybe I don't really know about. But it's so damn popular, they're all sold out.
What?
Yeah, so that's the booking I could get, Jamaican. So I was like, well, that's what I'm going to do.
Right, anyway, tell me about Kourtney Kardashian.
The Kourtney Kardashian drama. Where do I begin? So, as fellow watchers of Keeping Up with the Kardashians will know, the major dramas of the series is that Kourtney is super pissed off with Kim because she feels that Kim like co-opted and stole her wedding vibes. Because for those of you that remember, Kourtney Kardashian did her whole wedding with Dolce & Gabbana in Positano in Italy. 4 months later, Kim then did a collaboration with them, which saw her creative direct one of their shows. And presenter at Milan Fashion Week. It was all based on 90s archives, which is exactly what the vibe of Kourtney's wedding was. I will say that at first, when I saw these accusations from Kourtney, I was like, yeah, actually kind of fair enough. Like, for Kim to do a big, big collaboration with Dolce & Gabbana 4 months after your wedding does devalue your wedding a bit, because it makes it, to me, as the average like viewer, look like Dolce & Gabbana only did your wedding with the promise that they were going to get this bigger and better thing with Kim later. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the vibe that I got from there at first. So I was like, that's actually kind of fair enough. However, that's actually not where Kourtney goes with it. And actually that's not what seems to be the crux of the issue in the end. Basically, Kourtney feels that Kim used her wedding as a business opportunity and so hustled that deal, like, off the back of that event. She feels that Kim always wants everything to be about her and that Kim was kind of bad vibes at her wedding because it wasn't like about her, so she didn't like it. She feels that Kim is like really materialistic and money driven and will put money before everything. And she's like, this was my wedding. Like, this isn't just business. Like, you could have come to me and asked me how I felt about it.
Is a Kardashian wedding not business thoughts?
Well, that is an interesting point, because then when they eventually have their like get together and they finally talk about it after like teasing it for like 7 episodes, because the whole family's obviously talking about it, but Kim and Kourtney doesn't want to speak to Kim. She's like, no, I'm not even interested in talking to her. I just don't want her in my life, kind of thing. But Kim does do a sly dig. She's like, yeah, everyone thought the wedding looked so sponsored anyway. And Kourtney's like, well, I don't care. It was my wedding. I don't care what other people think, because I did it because it was personal to me. There were other brands that I could have worked with in my wedding, and I chose to do. And this is where Kourtney was then getting really cringe. And I was like, this is the most, as everyone online is saying, like, unserious rich people drama. Like, you actually just have to laugh. Like, Kourtney was like, you know, I've been legitimately living La Dolce Vita for the last 5 years. Like, literally, she said that. She was like, you know, I've been going to Italy every summer. I legit live that lifestyle. And then you made La Dolce Vita. Like, the theme of your Chow Kim collaboration.
Oh my God, Dolce Vita. That's
and I'm
funny.
Like, oh, give me a break. Yeah, you went and sat on a fucking private yacht for 2 weeks each bloody summer. Like, Kim's argument is like, look, the vibes were so different for your wedding. I specifically said that we couldn't do the Madonna collection. We couldn't do veils, loads of the stuff from your wedding that they wanted to do. I was like, we're not having that included. I went out of my way to make sure it was as unlike your wedding as possible. I even had a whole email chain with them where I begged them to push it back because I felt 4 months was a little bit close. But, you know, it was a huge opportunity for me. And then this is where Kim just gets so petty. It's actually hilarious. So as I say, originally I was like, oh, I kind of see why Courtney feels a bit like meh about it, because it does just make it look like the only reason, as I say, that they did her wedding was as like, well, because we're getting a bigger, better, longer term collaboration out the whole family. And other people in the family have done stuff with D&G as well since. So Corey, Kris Jenner's partner, did like a jokes like Corey and D&G collab. And then Kylie did a D&G eyewear campaign. But Courtney's issue is that, because Kim's like, well, other people in the family have done it. Like, why are you annoyed at me? And she's like, well, because you literally took all the vibes of my wedding. It's not like you just did a campaign. Like, you went and did a fashion show based on all the outfits that I pulled from the archive for like all of you guys to wear at my wedding. So again, petty, rich person, ridiculousness. But then Kim actually gets like so unbelievably like low. It's hilarious. Kim's genuinely annoyed in her like confessional. So, you know, when they talk about what's been happening after, and she's like, who had their wedding in Italy? Me. She stole my fucking wedding country. So she's like, I never said anything. And she's like, who performed at Courtney's wedding? Andrea Bocelli. Who performed at my wedding? Andrea Bocelli. Andrea Bocelli is my favorite male singer of all time. And she's like completely serious. And so she's saying like, you know, Courtney actually copied my wedding, but I never said anything. And you're like, okay, no, this is actually insane.
That is so random that Bocelli would be Kim
at both their weddings.
Singer.
Yes, her favorite male singer of all time. It's like, obviously, because she's like trying to be classy. And yeah, obviously, you know, I love Kim, but come on, that's so totally
okay. Wise. So who do you prefer, Kim or Court?
I prefer Kim. Sorry, I just do. I like Courtney. She's funny, but I do think that she's a bit like,
I'm sorry, there's just a bit of a whiff of desperation about her.
Yeah. Well, she didn't even used to be like that. That's the thing. Like pre-Travis, I feel like she was very happy to be like a mom, and the show would often focus on the fact that like everyone else in the family had like a business and that she didn't. Kim and Kris especially would like dig her for it all the time. Like, everyone else has a brand. Like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why haven't you leveraged this into like any kind of success, basically? And Courtney would be like, look, not everything's about money. And this is where I do get Courtney's perspective. Again, it's quite funny because you can tell that Courtney's the one that's done all the therapy. So Courtney even says to Kim, like, why? You need to look at yourself. Maybe it's food for thought for later life, but like, why do you always want more? Why is nothing ever enough? Why did you have to take the money for this gig? Why did you have to get that next achievement? Like, why can't what you have just be enough?
She does come across as the most normal.
Yeah. And I think she is totally in the way that she's like, look, I'm just not being part of this insanity. And just little things. Like, I remember there was this funny beef one year about Christmas morning, and like Courtney, everyone in the family was saying that Courtney was being difficult because she didn't want to be at like Kris Jenner or Kim's house on Christmas morning. And they were like, oh, why is she always like fucking with the plans for everyone? Actually, Courtney's reason was that she was like, I want my kids to wake up in their own house without staff there on Christmas. Like, I want it to just be us. Whereas at Kim's or Kris's, there's always going to be staff there. And I'm like, well, actually, then in that case, that is kind of fair enough. Like, she wants her kids to have a more normal life.
Yeah.
She doesn't want them to be like hand weighted to on a silver platter, like, you know. Whereas I think Kim's obviously so like cool with being that like bougie bitch. She just doesn't care. Like, she likes being like the billionaire boss bitch. Like, they're so shameless in the show. Like, when she's like, they're like, yeah, we're just jumping on the private jet to like Vegas for like 3 hours. They very much don't care. Whereas Courtney at least tries, even though sometimes it's a bit lip servicey, like her very questionable role as Boohoo's environmental advisor.
Oh my god.
She, at least, I feel like Courtney is a bit more on that like self-development path. Or is that all narcissism because she's had too much time and she's just been in therapy?
Or is it less annoying for someone being like, I'm just going to take my private jet and not apologise about it? Whereas Courtney clearly does do that.
She's like,
doesn't talk
about it. Well, she'll say, she's like, I actually fly commercial. I think that was one of her like clapbacks to the whole.
Guys, PSA, we have to tell you about London's hottest new hack that is a game changer for date night and will be music to the ears of all the foodies listening, I promise.
Yes, honeys, you know that we love a fancy meal here at Straight Up. So Yonder is a premium lifestyle credit card and our new sponsor. And hear us out, this isn't just any ordinary credit card. The points you earn can be spent at some of London's best restaurants, cafes, bars and entertainment hotspots. And new members can try Yonder out for free for the first 6 months.
Bargain. The money you spend using the card, from your weekly food shop to your summer holiday, converts directly into points that you can then spend at these incredible places, from Bow to Cricket to Crossbows to Lena Stores, you name it.
Now, I've had credit cards with convertible points before, but they're always so limiting in terms of where you can spend them. It's business hotels or boring brands that feel quite irrelevant or, quite frankly, just way too expensive. Yonder is the first credit card that lets you spend points in the places that you'd actually want to go anyway.
Trust me, guys, it's so good that when my boyfriend first got Yonder and took me out for a free dinner with his points, so romantic, I immediately reached out to Yonder myself to see if they partner with us, because I had to tell you about it.
It's also genuinely an amazing way to discover new restaurants or try new things in London, particularly since the experiences are changed up every month. I, for one, have booked to go to a pasta workshop at a restaurant in Shoreditch using my points, and it's definitely not something I would do otherwise. Very exciting.
Very exciting, babe. Similarly, my boyfriend and I went to Soho's new super cute, cozy British restaurant Sussex on Sunday evening, which I definitely wouldn't have done otherwise. I would be at home, pigging out on a delivery, feeling sorry for myself.
So, the details. After you've passed the 6-month free trial, the card costs £15 a month, which may seem like a lot if you don't already pay for a premium credit card. But something that immediately makes the cost worth it for me is the fact that the monthly premium includes worldwide travel insurance, and you can use the card abroad with no FX fee, no matter what the currency.
Considering I pay similar travel insurance anyway and rack up about 15 quid in currency conversion fees every time I go abroad, it was a no-brainer for me.
Head to yondercard.com to download the app and try Yonder for free for your first 6 months, plus get £5 to spend on one of Yonder's treat experiences. Approval is subject to eligibility, and you need to be over 18 and a UK resident to apply. A membership fee and T's and C's apply. Borrow responsibly. The representative rate is 64% APR variable. So go get earning those points.
Thank you to our partner Yonder.
And it's very obvious that D&G have set up like a long-term, big-ass partnership with the Kardashians, which is quite funny. I'm probably going to butcher these quotes now because I can't remember what it actually was. But what's hilarious about it that everyone was talking about when Kourtney's wedding happened is that I think it was Domenico Dolce, not Stefano, was actually like really, really scathing about the Kardashians in the past and was like, they're trash, they're so tacky. So like they've actually spoken before about how they think the Kardashians are like,
yeah. Amen.
Yeah, yeah. And then now suddenly they're like the besties. But you can see it all, like when you almost get the sense watching it that like Dolce & Gabbana have even partly done this Kim thing and the wedding to be in the show. Like they feature very heavily in the show. Like there are like 4 episodes that are happening like in the atelier, in Milan, with Domenico, with Stefano. They're making whole narratives about like Kim learning to find her voice and like say what she likes, because she'll try and be like, I think those shoes are lighter than that. And Stefano's like, no, definitely not those. And like he just like shuts her down every time she tries to have a say. And she'll be like, I think those boots are a bit much. He's like, no, this is very sexy, very sexy. And then just like... yeah. So there's a whole, like, they're going big on, like, the narrative around, like, Dolce & Gabbana. As I say, they must be doing something, because why on earth they would do a partnership with Corey Gamble unless there was a bigger play it move? I just don't know. And also, why would literally all the family members all be doing stuff with them?
So is Kim dating someone at the moment?
So there was whispers that she was, like, maybe with Tom Brady, but people think not. I must say, actually, on the Pete Davidson front...
Who the hell is Tom Brady?
He's a sportsman.
Oh, yeah.
And used to be married to Giselle, didn't he? Or am I actually getting the two confused? Sorry, guys, if I am. And I think he's actually got quite a bad public...
I mean, they just divorced.
I don't know. I think they broke up a while ago. But he's basically... And Kim has read out her, like, list of requirements on the show. And obviously, she literally requires someone that's, like, you know, as successful as her, is great with kids, isn't bald, has great teeth, like just funny. Like you're like, well, it's clear what she means is a celebrity. She means someone of her stature and that's it. So
do you think
I don't know.
She feels like we do when we were talking about in a few episodes ago that like the dating pool is fucked for women?
Kind of, but she's in a whole different world in that she's not even in the dating pool. Do you know what I mean? So that's what she was saying is weird for her. She's got to like wait for like people to slide into her DMs and stuff. She doesn't even like put herself out there. I will say as well, as a side note, reading between the lines of these episodes of Keeping Up with the Kardashians, while on the one hand, it could definitely still be possible that the Pete Davidson relationship was actually fake the entire time and was kind of a storyline and yada, yada, yada. I definitely do see that could be possible, which we've talked about on air before. However, the other vibe I was getting is that he defo dumped her.
Really? How are you getting that vibe?
Because it's like, you get the vibe that it was like a sudden end to the relationship that was quite abrupt, that she kind of didn't see coming. And like, you know, she's had him on the show around her kids, all this stuff. And then suddenly like, she's got to like say, like literally in the first concession, even in the first episode, when they're like, so you're single now. And she's like, damn, yes. Like, I don't know. It's just something about it. And she just does seem quite vulnerable. And they constantly talk about what a hard year she's had. She turns 42 in it and they go on and on about what a shit year it's been for her. Obviously a lot of that is about the Kanye stuff, but they're talking about it being a shit year for her. Before then in the timeline, later on in the episode or the next episode, you do see her reaction to his White Lives Matter t-shirts and the anti-Semitism. And she is like hysterical. And it's actually really sad. Like, you feel really sorry for her because it's just awful to be like, she's like, this person is not the person I married that I know. Like, it's so horrific seeing the father of my children just disappear. Like, I don't know this person. And imagine, and she's like, he's ruining his own life. Like, he looks so bad. And like, this is literally the father of her kids who she feels really is acting in this way because he is mentally unwell. And she's got to watch this car crash, like, just unfold and can't do anything about it.
Oh, I do genuinely feel sorry for her about that. Okay, two closing questions. One, whose team are you on, Courtney or Kim's?
Well, as I say, so I flipped. Having seen the full thing play out, I was kind of on Courtney's team in that I was like, can she just have one thing for herself? Like, come on, Kim, did you need to do that? Like, couldn't you just wait a year? And also the way she does talk about it in the show, she's like, you know, it's such a big opportunity for me. Like, you know, my career's riding on this. It's like, no, it literally isn't, Kim. Like, your career is not riding on you fucking creative directing a Dolce & Gabbana show. Like, it was a storm in a teacup. No one even cared that much. I did. Actually, a fun fact that I saw from our fave Kardashian colloquium as well was that search interest around Courtney's wedding for D&G was way higher. So as a marketing exercise, Courtney's wedding by far outperformed the Kim Kardashian
show. That is so interesting. I wonder if people see her as a more serious person.
I think it was just that people were like fatigued with Kardashians and Dolce & Gabbana. Do you know what I mean? I think that the wedding was the moment. Like, everyone was interested in the Kardashians wearing Dolce & Gabbana like then at the wedding. Whereas like, would you be that interested in Kim creative directing a runway show? And I think it goes back to what we've talked about before and even working in fashion journalism as we have. Are most people that interested in fashion shows? No, they're not. Let's face it. Are most people interested in weddings? Yes, they are. You know, like, literally down to our basic bitch, like, internet behavior.
The only fashion show people were really interested in, it was the Victoria's Secret catwalk for all its problematic past, but they were, people would actually watch that.
I loved your anecdote about The Weeknd and Bella Hadid from that night.
Oh, yes.
When
I was at the Victoria's Secret fashion show.
At its height as well.
At its height.
2016, because it was, we'd met, and we met in 2016.
It was very exciting for me because GQ sent me to Paris and I got sent some Burberry dresses to wear. In hindsight, the one I wore was absolutely hideous and you wore it as well. Do you remember?
That hideous patchwork thing.
Where we looked like a Christmas ball.
Yeah.
Anyway, and it was like triangular. Did not suit me. Anyway, but I had these and some Louboutins and went to Paris, felt very chic, was staying in a hotel by myself. Went there. It was quite scary though, sitting like on the third row with all these fashion editors, with me being an absolute nobody.
It's just because like GQ was like, it's going to look better if we send a woman.
Yeah, probably.
Than like a male staffer to be like ogling the models as they come down the catwalk. Whoa, can you imagine?
One of the most haunting anecdotes from that day was when I went backstage to interview the models about what they would get their partners for Christmas, because we were going to do like...
Trying to find some kind of male appropriate angle
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what did the S models want for their Christmas present? And they were all in these matching like robes.
Oh, the pink and white stripies.
The matching
iconic
robes. Yeah, all like in a line. It was like an army of Yes models all getting their hair done. Gigi was there, Bella was there. Anyway, and I went round, did the rounds with the questions. It was all highly fascinating, as you can imagine. And then I went, got to Stella Maxwell, and I asked her what she would get her boyfriend for Christmas. And she was like, well, nothing, because I'm not interested in men. And I was so...
Oh, God. Right. Yeah, that is quite bad.
Because like, why didn't I research that?
Also, I guess it's just do you know what? That's a classic like early journalism mistake that you would make as well. And also, just to give you a little bit of credit, like, it was over 7 years ago. And I do feel like culture has changed a little bit in that, like, I mean, even the fact that there was a Victoria's Secret, everything about the whole day suggests that we were at a very different place, pre-Me Too, with culture than we are now. And in a way, as a young journalist, I feel like it might be quite an innocent mistake to like go in and kind of go from a heteronormative approach of just asking your question to all the models without really thinking about their sexuality either way. Like, it's not that you're actually being like, you're not trying to disregard other sexualities. You actually just were only fixating on your one question and you're so nervous. You just don't even, yeah.
Whereas now I'd be like, what are you getting your partner?
Yeah.
I wouldn't even say girlfriend or boyfriend.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Anyway, she was not impressed. And then at the actual show, I tried to write an article about the beef that I saw unfurling between The Weeknd, Bella Hadid and Gigi Hadid, because Bella Hadid and The Weeknd had just had a breakup and then they were in the VIP together.
It was at the party after, right, at the club.
Yeah.
And you were just snooping from the side.
Snooping and very, very important journalism. And I was like, oh my God, it looks like Gigi and Bella are shouting at him.
And wasn't Yolanda as well, the mom?
Yes. God, I'm so glad that you have a better memory than me.
Yeah. I'm not lying. I think that might be like one of the best pieces of celebrity gossip you've ever given me, like in our entire friendship. I've literally remembered that word for word.
Really?
And then I wrote it up, filed it at 1 a.m. to my editor, and he was like, we can't use this.
They were like, it's too, it could be libel.
And also it's just like, it's not serious. Like, it was just too...
too anecdotal.
It's like me... like
spying
on the Hadids and then writing it like a massive creep in my hotel room later that night.
Do you know, I think Bella Hadid is still doing stuff with Victoria's Secrets, because I follow her on Instagram. Obviously I don't follow Victoria's Secrets anymore, but I'm sure she posted something the other day about the new campaign.
You know, the fashion show is coming back.
Yeah, and they're trying to make it inclusive, aren't they, and have women of like all different body types. I don't know, I think it's too little too late, I'm afraid, Victoria's Secret. Not to poo-poo their attempts to try and get with like the 21st century, but it is a bit late. Like, everyone knows that they're doing it because they had to, not because they want to.
Exactly.
I wonder, they must got a new CEO as well, because remember their CEO, it turns out he was like really problematically kind of pervy and would like handpick these really young models. And I'm pretty sure they've now had to get like surely a female CEO in for an underwear brand. I mean, I always found that interesting about Victoria's Secret anyway. It was a company started by a man whose wife was named Victoria.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't agree with men designing women's underwears, quite frankly, because they don't know what's comfortable.
Yeah, they absolutely don't. So, Hans, to finish...
Are you going to tell me all about Leo Three's podcast?
I am going to be a little bit mean.
Go for it. We like to hear it. We can't be glowing all the time. We've given plenty of glowing reviews this week and last.
Yes. So, I am really getting the ick from Leo Three.
I haven't actually... listen to any of them yet. Is this okay, your PSA to not bother?
Well, look, I love Louis Theroux. I think he's a lovely man. I do really love his documentaries, and very much this ick is relative to him just being generally amazing. It's not me like actually saying I hate Louis Theroux. But recently I have definitely found him incredibly jarring. It started with him on Amelia de Moldenberg's Chicken Shop Date.
Did you find him jarring in that interview?
Yes.
Right.
And then I found the Jiggle Jiggle video incredibly embarrassing, and I thought they should never have released it. I thought it looked bad for both of them.
Do you actually? That's so funny.
I hated it. I literally couldn't even watch the end. Why? Fine to just do a little bit on the Chicken Shop Date, but then release it as a whole separate music video. Like, are you not ashamed? And then the final nail in the coffin for me and Louis Theroux was, I can say this because I did invite him on the podcast. And his
it was a no.
Did ignore me. so he has got his own podcast series, which actually I did enjoy during lockdown. I did.
Yeah, I did. I liked that.
I did like that. But the new season, I've only listened to one episode. It's the one with Amelia de Moldenberg.
Go on.
And he comes across like a full-blown narcissist.
Really? Did you watch it or listen?
Listen.
Interesting.
And he is interrupting her all the time.
Really?
I'm not joking, most of the episode is him trying to get her to debrief on his episode of Chicken Shop Date. Like,
no.
Yeah.
The audacity.
But honestly,
it's not about her, really.
Every time she tries to get a word in, he's like, no, but what was like the reception on your end of my episode? And oh my God.
Did you know
that when I walk past schools, like kids come up to me like, jiggle, jiggle. Like I'm stuck. Like he's kind of always doing it with an ironic wink, but you're still talking about yourself the whole time.
And actually like she's got like a very varied portfolio beyond her one Chicken Shop Date with you.
Yeah.
Like you could ask her about like the years and years that she has been spending interviewing influential creatives.
Which he does do, but then keeps interrupting her to bring it back to him.
Yes, that sounds very
annoying.
And
at one point he's like, oh, because he's talking about the whole story of how his whole episode came to be and how it's so unusual that he's like the only man over like 45 on the show and like he's the only documentary maker and just constantly making it about how...
What do they say like how it came to be? Because I'm very sorry to interrupt you, but just let me know what you think. Is it when it's like how it came to be? People always look into these things so much. Like even recently when she had like Jennifer Lawrence on and stuff, but it's like, it's just whoever's available and you could get through the PR really, isn't it?
Actually, she does say that he was a good gateway celeb. Because once you get Louis Theroux on, you can kind of get anyone.
Yes.
From lots of different kind of audiences.
That's true. I actually still sometimes link not necessarily link the piece because it's not that good because it's literally one of the first interviews that I ever did at GQ, but I still sometimes mention the fact that I've interviewed Louis Theroux, even though it was like 6 years ago, because I feel it's just one of those fail-safe names that's always going to impress people.
It's good. Yeah. It does. But yeah, at one point he's going on and on about the bloody episode and she makes like a kind of bored intake of breath and he's like, am I boring you? And
she's, no.
No, it's just that like, I know this story. Like, yeah, because obviously she's part of it. And he's like, yeah, but the audience might not know. So I'm having to retell it for them. And there's like a slight, you can just tell in moments, I think she is finding him quite annoying.
Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah.
Is she being like a persona or herself or like what's the vibe?
She's being herself.
Yeah.
So for instance, I was just very annoyed being a massive Amelia fan. And obviously we've had her on the podcast and genuinely love Chicken Shop Day. Always watch it the day it comes out.
Like, everything she does is just so clever and brilliant. So we're in awe of her. And love you, Amelia.
We love you. And she's talking about how Drake has no PR and how he's like constantly messaging her just himself. And like he's going to be the season finale. And she starts talking about how interesting he is that he doesn't really have a team that he hands over these kind of things to. And Louis just cuts across her. And it's like, I'm sorry, but knowing the ins and outs of Drake's like PR like situation is fascinating.
Way more interesting than asking how people received Jiggle Jiggle when there have been like at least 50 opinion pieces about that very phenomenon.
Yes, it really, really annoyed me. Anyway, there were some other interesting bits that he did get out of her, which is that how fascinating is this? Joe Biden's team have been in talks with her team to get Joe Biden on Chicken Shop Day.
Yeah. It's actually becoming quite popular, like across the pond, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
so like it's the same audience demographic as in the same number of American viewers as British ones now.
Wild.
And Bernie Saunders has also been in touch.
Oh, that would be amazing. I would love a bit of Bernie. I love Bernie so much.
She does say that would be more in line with the audience, but she draws the line at Biden because she's just like, it would be random
and awkward and weird. But maybe, and yeah, I know awkwardness is meant to almost be her raison d'etre, but still.
And she talks about the fact that she is still single.
Is actually still single.
Well, this is thing, because I don't know if we've told listeners this, but when we had her on the podcast, we kind of had to like blur the fact that she wasn't single at the time.
Yeah, she actually had a boyfriend, but was like, can we not like go into that too much? Because obviously the whole persona is that I'm actually on a date and, you know, trying to get together with these guys.
I think we can say that now.
It was like literally like 4 years ago. So.
Yeah. So interestingly, he does, and props to Louis for broaching this actually, he does bring up the criticism that some people have had towards her, which I actually haven't seen her address yet. So he brings out the fact that some people have accused her of like appropriating black culture it's true that many of her first guests tended to be rappers and they tended to be black. And then people also found her doing the dates in a chicken shop was maybe mocking the fact that like she was middle class and chicken shops often associated like in a city, London, which means more likely working class people. However, she's very much of the opinion that like, no, the chicken shop date thing was just because like everyone hung out in chicken shops, like in London, it's a London thing. It's not necessarily even like a class or a race thing. And it's just an awkward place to have a date. And there were just loads of chicken shops near the youth club that I was working at. And so someone just suggested that as just like a funny place to have a date.
Yeah, because it started as a like a magazine column, didn't it? Yeah. She was saying it was like a youth magazine that she was working for and it was a written piece. And then after doing a few, I think it was like Lethal Bizzle or someone jokes that she did first, wasn't it? And then she realised.
Gets is the first one, actually.
Yeah. And then she realised, actually, this will just work so much better as a filmed thing.
And it's true that, you know, what is the least romantic place you can have a date? It probably is. Chicken shop is like among those among those venues. And then the other thing she mentions is like, you know, and actually I do really applaud her for doing this. She was just like, you know what? Yeah, I kind of welcomed the criticism because it meant that we could have an honest conversation about like privilege and access and the fact that as a white middle-class woman in the media, it's just easier for me. And I welcome those conversations.
Good for her. Yeah. Like so good for her. Props to Amelia.
Yeah.
I really like the kind of the social issues and stuff that she like draws attention to as well. Like I feel she's really, really good at using her platform for actual like social good.
Definitely. And also because her dad has been like a Labour councillor for like 30 years.
Oh, really?
And she said, you know, she makes sure her team is diverse and does like workshops and like work experience and stuff, which is good. And to be honest, I love the comment sections of Instagram, as you know, whenever I look to see the like, what people are saying to the accusations of her, like jumping on like black culture, or whatever. A lot of people that I would say identify as black, having looked at their profiles, are like, oh my God, like none of us are offended. Like,
The
celebrities clearly aren't offended, otherwise they wouldn't be going on the show. Like, can we all just
like leave the girl alone? Do you remember like when the first criticisms of her ever appeared? I think Giggs got involved and was like, oh, just leave her alone, man, shut up.
Did he defend her?
Giggs came to her defense.
Oh my gosh.
And that was like, as I say again, like years ago.
Armor. Gig.
I know. It'd be quite the person you'd want to come to your rescue.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with him. So guys, yeah, that's my little rant about Louis Theroux. I'm sorry if that offends any Louis stans.
So while the guests are on there, are you going to listen to any more? Or has that put you off for good from the whole series?
I'm not going to lie, I was not that interested. Okay, Nick Cave maybe I'd quite like to listen to. But then some of the others, Craig David. I have listened to Craig David
too much.
Every podcast.
Too much Craig David.
Guys, I have to say that this is sometimes what influences who we get on as guests. Mm. There is now a trend of like people doing the rounds. And Craig David has been on every fucking podcast.
We did originally want Craig David. And I actually know him and even tried to DM him, which he didn't reply to, but less said about that, the better.
He was very nice to you once.
He follows me on Instagram and like will sometimes comment back to my stories and stuff like that. I've interviewed him a few times, so I thought it would be a shoo-in. It wasn't. And actually now we're very glad we haven't done it, because what else could he have to say, quite frankly?
Literally. However, if no one has listened to Chicken Shop Date before, I recommend.
Oh yeah, what's your fave?
I love Nella Rose. So, you know, I'm obsessed with her. She's like one of the funniest women on the internet. Also love the Kiki Palmer one, Matty Healy.
I haven't seen that one. I do want to see the Jennifer Lawrence one as well. Because I've seen some of the clips. I was like, okay, that's quite funny.
So it was funny, but there were points where I was like, you look possessed, as in J-Law was like, you look mental. You look possessed. You look crazy. Also at one point she says that her boyfriend laughed so hard he died, but then like doesn't like, but then she's like, no, he really did die. And then like, just, they just move on. So it's like, did he die?
I mean, that's one thing I will say about these kind of interviews, and every different kind of format has its place, of course. But maybe the reason that I don't keep up on watching them like every single time is because I actually want to like hear something new from the person. And I feel like this kind of like unserious, funny format like doesn't really dig into like any specifics at any point.
No, it's true. But I guess
it's quite surface level. It's for the vibe and not the intel, I would say.
It's more that's to see them in uncomfortable situations reveals more about the personality. For instance, the Burner Boy one is funny just because
I've never seen him like that.
Like being silly.
Yeah.
Because he's such like an impressive, powerful presence.
Yeah.
So, which is why actually it does make complete sense that she should never have anyone like, because Louis Theroux is like, why wouldn't you have someone like Donald Trump on? And she's like, no, because the way I edit my shows often makes the person look better than they actually are, which I find interesting.
Interesting.
Like, sometimes they can be quite difficult, or they take themselves too seriously, or they come off a bit, you know, off kilter. And the way I edit it, because obviously she trims it down from like an hour chat to like 5 minutes, she very much airbrushes them essentially.
Got it.
But she says there was not a single chat that she has killed, like she's run all of them.
Interesting.
Being slightly awkward,
I guess you would, wouldn't you, if you're going to all that effort of filming it?
Yeah, but that's why she said she would only ever have people that she really likes, because I think she gives them such like a favorable treatment through her edit that you wouldn't want to platform someone.
You wouldn't do that for like Donald Trump. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I got it. Yeah. She basically wants this to be like positive promo for the person. So she's not therefore going to have someone like.
It's problematic.
Got it. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Very good point. I mean, Amelia is just fucking killing the game at the moment, isn't she? She's like red carpet hostess with the mostest. She's just, I mean, not that it's new, it's been on for ages, but every time I'm watching TV in the evenings, the Olay advert pops up.
Oh, yeah. She's got fabulous skin. You know, I've actually bumped into her quite a lot on the London circuit.
Yeah.
She is as awkward as you might think she is. Like when I bumped into her on New Year's Eve, we had a conversation, and then also I'm quite awkward.
Oh
and
gosh,
so we didn't know how to end it. So she went, okay then. And then like just turned around. And that was it.
You're like, oh, okay, bye. Lol.
Oh no.
That's quite funny.
Anyway, right.
Right, hunties, is there anything you would like us to debrief on next time? We should just preface, we are aware that this is not our usual bi-monthly celeb interview, as it would be.
Oh yes, I forgot
we
about that.
We had some sort of a cancellation, slash a ghosting, slash we'll tell you more about it. A scamming, perhaps, that we can tell you more about next time.
Basically, we're not going to tell you about it yet, because we might still get that person on the podcast. But if we don't,
then we'll go into it.
Then we can, yeah.
So this was a bit of a last minute episode. Hope you enjoyed it, honeys. Let us know what you think. Let us know if there are any things that you would like us to debrief on, any recommendations you think we need to know about. Can I just say, as a very, very last minute side note, I absolutely adored It's Not a Pity memoir that you lent me.
So
and I just thought of it the other day and realised that we never
Maybe we should talk debriefed. About it when it comes to the screen.
Ooh, good idea.
Yeah.
I think just for some reason, based on our research yesterday, and I'm sorry to be so elusive again, guys, I've been thinking a lot about memoir. So,
oh yes, so have I.
Yeah,
we're seeing Barbie next Monday. How exciting!
Woo-hoo, can't wait.
Should we go wearing pink? That would be quite fun.
That would be quite fun, but then it's also really tragic. I don't know.
All my colleagues are going.
Are they?
Yeah.
God, literally everyone in the world is so excited about this film, aren't they? I
think you should wear your hot pink. Let's both wear pink.
My friend Tam let me know as well. She replied to our Instagram story saying that Mexico City 2 is entirely pink.
What?
When we posted about Barbie's marketing being like everywhere, my friend Tam, who literally lives in Mexico City, was like, oh my God, the whole of Mexico City is pink. It's like everywhere. It's crazy. So I'm saying it's a global phenomenon.
When you said that, I was thinking of Mexico City with the number 2, assuming it was like some film sequel.
What?
Okay, do you know what, guys?
We need to go and have some dinner.
Yeah. Okay, bye.
Bye, guys. Rate, review, and subscribe. Please, please, please. I know no one ever does, but if you could, we would be so grateful. Just a quick tap on Spotify, especially a quick write-up on Apple. We would love you forever.
It helps us get really good guests.
It really does. So please, please, please.
And do send this episode to a friend and discuss Jonah Hill's behaviour. We would love to know what you think.